You're listening to the Love is Black podcast.
Where the host is fly,
the love is dope,
and the conversation is always 100.
Welcome back to your favorite podcast. It is Love is Black. I'm Harvey.
And I'm Carice.
And the season of love part two continues, or part three, or
nobody just called this the season of love ever,
but
at any point.
But
in time.
We're all love. I don't know. I just kind of blanked out there for a second, but it's all love. That's what we've been talking about.
Seasons one, two, and three.
We have all been love. So
all love.
Just a continuous love season. Yes?
Yeah.
Great. Excellent. Yes. So as we continue, we are talking about marriage today. How do you feel about your marriage right now? Putting you on the spot. This is the spot. You standing on it. How do you feel about your marriage right now?
Wow. Good.
Am I still shiny?
No.
I'm not shiny?
No, you're
good.
Not shiny.
All right.
You just had something on your face.
I did? Yeah. On a scale of 1 to 10.
Wow, don't do this.
On a scale of 1 to 5? Are you happy right now?
Yes.
Good.
Right
I'll
now.
Take that. I would say, our guest said 6. That's how you
introduce.
That's how you introduce yourself. With that said, she's happy. She's all right. We'll work on that. We got to get that at least to like a solid 8. So we'll see what's up.
We'll see where the rest of the night goes.
Yes. So I am on Facebook, and I was lucky enough to be in a Facebook page discussing love. And I was lucky enough to be in there with our guest. His name is Charles Duke. I know, I messed your name up already. I didn't even drink anything yet. Charles Duke. And with talking with him, discovered that he had written a book about his marriage. And after just reading what he was talking about, we needed to have him on the podcast. So, Charles Dukes, thank you for being on the podcast. How are you today, sir?
Well, thank you both for having me. I'm very honored to be on the Love is Black podcast.
Yay!
I'm doing well. I'm doing well.
Excellent.
Just really appreciate the opportunity to spend some moments with both of you. I've enjoyed some of the podcasts that I've heard. You guys really are doing a fantastic job. Please keep it up, because we need to hear about love among us, Black love.
Yes, sir.
Yes, absolutely.
So important. Mm-hmm.
So I'm really looking forward to this, because I've heard such great things. Harvey has read your book, and he's told me I need to add it to my list, because I'm in the middle of 4 books right now. So,
oh, let me jump to the front.
I know.
All them other books are all professional stuff.
They are. It's very, like, I read a lot of nonfiction, like, health and wellness stuff. So I need to get back into some, like, Black love, Black authors, and really, like, you know, dive into some Black content. But tell us a little bit about yourself. Introduce yourself to our audience, if you don't mind.
Sure. I'm Charles Duke III. I am an author. I am a writer, a journalist, frustrated musician. And I was born and raised in New York City. I currently reside in Central New Jersey. And I am the proud father and understand stepfather, but our family, we don't use the word step. Proud father of 2, unfortunately one has passed, but we're doing fine. And really want to get the word out there that, you know, Black marriage, Black love does exist. Sometimes it's not shown to its full extent in the media today. Sometimes people get an unrealistic view of what Black relationships are. And I think that I wrote my book, the motivation was to A, show that it exists, but also it's possible. But you got to commit to it. You know, you can't go by what you see in media today. You know, if you look at shows that show Black love, there's a lot of backstabbing and backbiting and, you know, a lot of unrealistic a lot of unrealistic scenarios, which lead to unrealistic expectations.
Yes, sir.
You know what I'm saying? Wow. So basically, that's my motivation for writing the book. I wrote it to basically have in front of people, sort of like a Black guidebook to marriage. I don't think we have a Black guidebook to marriage, at least from what I've seen out there. And Black marriage can be successful, can be, you know, a wonderful thing. As I had the fortunate experience of being together with my wife for 38 years, my late wife, I should say, for 38 years. We were married for 35 until she passed, like 4 days before our 35th anniversary. But it's a beautiful thing. And I am an advocate for Black marriage. I want to see more couples attempt it and be good at it. So that's the reason I pretty much wrote the book. Yes, there are trials and tribulations, but I think the book kind of indicates or illustrates how you can get through the trials and tribulations.
Agreed.
Mm-hmm.
Like that.
So I guess to kind of get us rolling, would you mind kind of giving us a little bit of how you and your late wife Blanche got together and kind of tell us that?
Sure. It's kind of hard not to do this, to tell this story without some humor behind it. However, what happened was really fate. I'm from New York City. And one Friday night, I was on the company softball team and we were downtown and we celebrated. So I'm driving, as we broke up roughly about 11:30, close to midnight, on the evening of May 16th, 1980, going into May 17th, 1980. I was driving back home. I lived in the Bronx at the time. I'm born and raised in Harlem, but I was driving back to where I was living in the Bronx. And I was driving up Central Park West. If anybody knows about New York City, that's on the west side, right outside of Central Park. And I was driving up and I was saying to myself, you know, I wouldn't mind having a nightcap at one of my favorite places at the time. This place was called The Cellar on West 95th Street. So what happened was I'm driving and I said to myself, if the light is green, I'm gonna keep on going to the Bronx. If the light is red, I'm gonna hang a left on West 95th and go to The Cellar. As fate would have it, the light was red. So I turned left on West 95th Street, very quickly found some parking, and I walked into The Cellar, which was really like a happening place for, you know, Black people. They had like it was like a lounge, live music, you know, which I know is a thing of the past now, a thing nowadays, but we had live music. And I walked in, saw, you know, a couple of friends of mine and what have you. And I stood off to the side of the bandstand and I looked over to the bar. Oh, first I pulled out my pipe because you could smoke in New York City clubs back then. So I took out my pipe, lit it, was listening to the band called Platinum Hook. They were, they had recorded with Motown in the 70s. And notice these eyes on me. And I'm looking, I'm seeing, and the eyes that were on me belonged to one of the most beautiful women I've ever seen in my life. I mean, she was just drop dead gorgeous. This lady back here on the cover of the book. And she kept staring, I kept looking. So I walked over to where she was. She was at the bar with another friend of hers. And, you know, being the gentleman that I am, I walked over and said hello, introduced myself, offered to buy her a drink. She refused the drink as a lady. She refused it, but we started talking. And the conversation was so smooth and it was just so refreshing. I really enjoyed talking with her. And then she dropped something on me. I was saying, I'm not going to stay long, so I'm going to, have this drink, probably catch a set of Platinum Hook and split. And then she says to me, yeah, I have to get out of here too. My son's got a softball game in the morning. Now, you have to understand something. I am like 2 weeks away from my 25th birthday. And I'm looking at her and I said, what are you talking about, son? Well, she said, I have a 12-year-old son who is playing, baseball tomorrow morning. He's playing Pop Warner baseball. And I said, if you don't mind me asking, how old are you? And she replied that she was 32. And I was saying, wow, well, you look great, fan. I'm not saying that 32 looks, past due there or anything like that. But you were fine, et cetera, et cetera. So we kept talking, we exchanged numbers, which led to another in joke with us over time. She gave me a couple of numbers to reach at work and her home number. And I told her, I have clients in New Jersey where she was living, and I'd like to take you out to perhaps lunch next week. So I called her to set it up. And as it turned out, I wasn't getting out to seeing some clients in South Orange in New Jersey, when I thought I was. So I quickly asked her, would you like to go to dinner instead, in the city, here in the city? And we made a date. And took her to a restaurant called the Horn of Plenty, which was another Black restaurant at the time, which was very, very popular, and food was excellent. The conversation was just over the top great, okay? Our conversation was very varied. We talked about so many things. We talked about politics. We talked about music. We talked about our spiritual walk, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And, I remarked that at that time I was looking for a church home and I was looking to move. So I took, after dinner, got the check, I paid the check, took her home in South Orange. We talked a little bit more. And actually ever since that date, we had been together since that date, since May 16/17, 1980. The following week was my 25th birthday, and I invited her over. I was having like a small gathering, and she came. We just had a great time, and we had been together since that moment, since the moment we met. It was really, really good. Our conversations over the phone leading up to the 25th birthday celebration were fantastic. I was really intrigued. And I think if she was alive today, I'm pretty sure she'd say she was intrigued too. And that's pretty much the story of how we met. We just had a wonderful time together. Obviously I miss her, it was great. I'll just put it that way. We courted for 3 years, finally got married. And which was good, because the relationship took all types of twists and turns with things that we both were going through. And so we got to see each other under certain circumstances. And we became more convinced as time goes, oh yeah, we can do this. Let's do this. So we got married on July 16th, 1983. The rest is documented in the book, but as they say, it is history. So that's how we met, and those are the things that came to pass.
I find it interesting that very early on, you guys got into a talk about two things that people say you shouldn't really talk about so early on, politics and religion. Yeah.
But, you know, the main thing is we both, you know, you have to keep in mind, 1980, there was a presidential election, well, presidential campaigns going on. Jimmy Carter versus, it ended up Carter versus Reagan. And, you know, she had a difference of opinion of who should be the Democratic nominee. I was pro-Carter at the time. And, you know, we riffed on that for a moment. But it was just, like I said, I had been dating since the breakup of a prior relationship of a woman I thought I might marry, or I was going to marry. We were together 4 years. And so after that breakup, I was dating in between that time, but never vibed with somebody like I vibed with Blanche. Blanche was just, like I said a couple of times already, she was a breath of fresh air, okay? And I think she found me to be a breath of fresh air as well. So, you know, we just hit it off, you know. And going back over the years that we were together, the friends and the family, I'll say the friends, essentially, we were considered amongst our circle of friends, the yardstick. Okay, if you have a marriage like Charles and Blanche's, that's what we, you know, that's what you want to go for. So it was good. It was all good. It was all good. You say, you know, you shouldn't talk about politics and spirituality. But I think sometimes we miss the boat by not talking about our political and spiritual beliefs.
Yeah.
Because that it makes up, it does constitute a lot of what you believe, how you see the world, and your beliefs. You know, that's basically it. So things went very well past that point in time, I have to say.
That's good.
Yeah.
So it didn't break up anything, Carice. We
Hallelujah.
Only because you said, yeah, you talked about two things that you shouldn't talk about. Now, I firmly believe that you should, or I firmly believe it was okay in our case, because, you know, we had opinions, and and the one thing Blanche was born with the day she was born was opinions. You know
a lot of people like
that. I think the doctor slapped her, and out came her worldview.
One thing I've noticed, and we've had a lot of guests, a lot of couples talking about love. We had one couple in particular who mentioned when they were dating, one of the, I think the husband in that case mentioned that when he dated somebody, he wanted to date for all four seasons. When hearing you talk about how you two courted, I feel like that's really what happened. You spent time getting to know her. Can you elaborate? Because you said you courted for 3 years.
Yes. So
do you feel like that time, really getting to know her, really enhanced what eventually would be a successful marriage?
Let me throw in something else. I didn't only get to know her, but I made sure that once I felt I was going to be serious about Blanche, that I got to know the kids and I developed a relationship with both. Her son, well, I'll say my son and my daughter. And in that 3 years' time, we really gelled, really as a family. I know it sounds fairy tale-ish, but this is the truth. Yeah, there you go. Yeah, I see you. This is what happened. I mean, you know, they got to know me. I got to know them. And I'll tell you one story that took place in those 3 years. Actually, I got a couple of stories. But one thing that took place, I always believed, first of all, when I was dating someone, I wanted to know their family. What formed them? What were their influences? Okay, so I got to know her family, which was sort of like a throwback to me because her family, her parents came from the South, you know, as did my family, okay? And, but my my mother's family was the closest. So and my mother had passed 73. So being with Blanche and meeting her family and going to cookouts and dinners, it was like a throwback to me at my age. I was sort of like, wow, this is all familiar. You know, it's family and what's have you. And I got to know everybody and I got to, you know, and everybody respected me. So, which was really good. Getting to know Mark and Kim and as individuals, I might add, because that's very important. Getting to know them as individuals allowed us to bond on several levels, which just took the relationship even further to the apex, you know? So we were getting there in 3 years. One story that really touches my heart, and I think I touch upon this in the book, is I was working in corporate America at the time I met her. And working out of New York City at the position that I had, there was a chance that I was going to be transferred from New York out to Michigan. I called Blanche up and I told her that, you know, yeah, we're having a great time. This is still 1980, 81. And, you know, we were having a great time getting to know each other, going out, this, that, and the other. And I called her up one night, one afternoon, really, I was at the office to let her know I wanted to come by and tell her about, you know, I was going to be transferred to Michigan. So in taking the, hour drive from where I was living in the Bronx to South Orange, I pull up and my son, Mark, well, her son, Mark at the time, was on the steps and he was looking kind of dejected. And when I got out the car, walked across the street, he's sitting on the steps of the house and I'm saying, I guess you heard. And he said, yeah, I did. I said, well, how do you feel about that? He said, I don't want you to go. And that just tore me up inside, really. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I talked to him a little bit about it. And, you know, he says saying, you know, I don't want you to go, this, that, and the other. I said, okay, I'm gonna take that into consideration because I'm thinking very seriously about your mom, you know. So, you know, we went inside and we talked. But I think it was that moment on, I really realized how important I became in his life, you know. And, you know, that's that kind of stands out to me. And I know I talk about, I think I say talk about that in the book, Harvey, if you remember. And, you know, went through a couple of trials and tribulations during those 3 years, unemployment, in which I saw Blanche's strength and steadfastness in believing in me. She said, Charles, you've been nothing but a class act in the months that we've been together. There's no way in the world I'm going to leave you, you know, because that's what I was worried about, you know, her coming from an unsuccessful marriage. And, you know, I didn't want to put the kids through that. So I, you know, with that, I made a decision to stay and, you know, and ended up eventually losing the job because I didn't want to lose New York. Plus, I didn't want to do that for the rest of my life, what I was doing. So that was a part of it. So, you know, like I said, we muscled through that period. In that time period, we both joined a church together, found ourselves, you know, spiritually grounding ourselves together as well as, the relationship on a whole. And that was pretty much it. During that time though, prior to becoming unemployed, we went over to one of my manager's houses for lunch. He always had a thing of inviting the sales people, new salespeople, over his house for lunch to get to know them, what have you. And he saw how serious Blanche and I were. And he said, I want to ask you guys the question, do you see yourselves together in the future? And, you know, by this time, some 10 months, 11 months had passed, and Blanche and I looked at each other and said, yeah, we do see each other. You know, she's in my crystal ball, and, you know, Blanche says, yes, we do see each other together. So he gave us a piece of unsolicited advice, which is the way he said it, and we kept that, and we kept this advice and passed it on to every young couple or any couple that we knew that was thinking about getting married. At that time, and his name was Steve Dirk, great guy, Steve says to us, well, I just want to tell you a little something, unsolicited advice. Marriage is 80% give and 20% take. If you can live with that mathematical equation, which I call the marriage mantra in the book, if you can live with that, those percentages, you'll have a successful marriage. And Steve, I mean, I was looking at the layout of his house and his family. Oh, he had a successful marriage. Trust me. So it was some advice that we took and became the foundation of our relationship. So that was that. And we found a spiritual home. We became, you know, got circle of friends. I was still doing my music thing also, playing in clubs on weekends. And that was it. So that's the answer to that question. Can I share one more story?
Please, yeah. Please.
Our first date, going to the Horn of Plenty in Manhattan. I had to come from the Bronx, pick her up where she was living in New Jersey. And we were driving back to New York, driving back on a I-495. Now, unbeknownst to her, she didn't know the instruments I played. So she says, and I relate this in the book, she says, we're turning radio, and I had a company car, which only had an AM radio at the time. So we turned to one station, one black station, which you can't get five inches from its transmitter out in Queens, New York. We go to another New York station, which was a sundowner station. So that meant that at that time, once the sun went down, that station cut off for the night. We tried to get the local station in Newark, which is the WNJR. But as we had passed Newark, they weren't playing anything, they were doing talk. So she's passing and flipping these radio stations, and she comes past some Latin music, okay? Now, I'm a huge Latin music fan. You guys call it salsa now, but back then we called it Latin music. I played timbales and I played conga in this band, as well as rhythm guitar. So she passes, she passes the Hispanic station, and she says, well, I know we don't want to hear this. So she said, well, you know, after a while she's flipping back and forth. And she says to me, well, I can't find anything. What do you want to hear? And I said, well, quite frankly, that bleep that we didn't want to hear sounded pretty good to me. That was, you know, she was like shocked, you know, but I used to joke to her. I said, you know, you almost got put out on I-495 that night. Before we hit the Lincoln Tunnel, you almost got put out. But anyway, you know, all was well. And that's when we had the great dinner, the great first date. And that's it. So hope I've answered. I think I'm taking up the first five chapters of the book there. But don't worry, everybody, there's 19 chapters. Yes. Actually, no, there's 23 chapters. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so anyway, that's that. That's that.
I love hearing you talk about, you know, talking about him. We haven't even really delved into, I guess, the marriage per se, but it's just kind of the introduction to the relationship. And yes, already I can hear the way you talk about Blanche, the love, the admiration, the respect. It's already there.
Yes.
And I think that's just one of many great parts to a great marriage.
Mm-hmm.
So you guys get married.
Mm-hmm.
Just give me an idea. You're married. What is that first year like? I mean, I don't want to go too deep. We're not trying to take away from the book and all. But
not a problem. Go as deep as you want. That first year was obviously year of adjustments because now we're living together. Mm-hmm. So they have to get used to my way of living. I got to get used to their way of living. But at the same token, it all kind of gelled. We had a great first year of marriage, you know, what have you. And what was funny is we did have a blowout argument. One night, the night before our first anniversary. And unfortunately, Kim, my daughter, was upstairs and she heard it all, blah, 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 blah.
Oh.
So Blanche was going to work the next day. It was a Friday night. She was going to work the next day. And actually a blowout was two nights before. So Kim heard the unfortunate thing of the interview. And that Saturday, I'm home because I was working Monday through Friday. I was home and Kim was upstairs being really uncharacteristically quiet. Normally, the music's on, Michael Jackson, what have you. Our local radio station here, BLS, but she was being too quiet. So I said to myself, she's seen this before, because as I said, Blanche had an unsuccessful first marriage to her father. So roughly about 2:30 afternoon, I called Kim downstairs, and I said, Kim, come here, I want to talk to you. Come on down. And at that time, she sat on the steps and, you know, her face in between the banister, the railings and the banister. And I said, listen, first of all, nothing's going to make me leave your mother. Okay. But you have to understand that all couples go through, they have arguments. It's human nature. We're not going to agree on everything. Okay. But there's nothing more secure than the love I have for your mother and the love she has for me. So I want you to understand that nothing's going to break us up. You know, what you heard last night, really, it was an aberration. Okay. And for my role in it, I apologize. And I'm sure your mom will talk with you later. But I just want you to understand that all is okay. We're not breaking up. I gave her a little peck on the cheek. I said, now go upstairs and turn on your music, okay? I don't want to hear no more quietness in this house. That's not the way you live, okay? So she smiled and went back upstairs. And sure enough, it started sounding like Saturday again. So that was that. So it was, like I said, it was a period of adjustments. But during that time, there were some great times. I remember taking Mark to his first NBA game. We were both at the time, I joke him about it now. At the time, we were both Laker fans. Okay, Magic Johnson, Norm Nixon, and of course, the great Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. And he just dug that. I mean, we just had a good time. And Kim was a great, big Jackson, the Jacksons at the time, and Michael Jackson fan. And, you know, at age 13, she was writing love letters to Michael Jackson every week.
Oh, wow. So
I found out in 1981, early in 1981, that the Jacksons were going to do three nights at Madison Square Garden in the city. Mm-hmm. So I got up one Sunday morning, took public transportation into New York, got the tickets, floor seats at the Garden. But check out the price of the $13 per ticket.
Oh, whoa. You still paying for that now?
four times 13 is 52. I can swing that, you know? And so I got back. I told Blanche, make sure that, you know, I called her. Said, make sure that the kids are home. Okay, I'm coming over. I got to her place in South Orange. And I called Kim downstairs. I said, Kim, what are you doing July? I think the date was July 18th. I said, what are you doing July 18th, 1981? What are you doing? She says, I don't know. So I go into my wallet. I said, how would you like to see Michael Jackson? And she just went berserk. She went crazy. You know, and this is what I mean. You have to build the relationship with the kids. You know what I'm saying? I took Mark to baseball game, him and his friend to Yankee Stadium. Huge Reggie Jackson fans. All they could talk about, oh, is Reggie going to hit one out? I hope Reggie hits one out. Well, he and his friend went to the bathroom at the top of the fourth inning. He said, and Mark said, you don't think Reggie's going to get up, do you? I said, well, you know, he hits cleanup and they're leading over at the top of the order. And so we should be back, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, so you want a chance, but keep in mind now, ain't no instant replay at the stadium. Mm-hmm. Okay, mm-hmm. So you hear live. Sure enough, he and his friend Robert, who we could call Man, went to the bathroom. And they hear all this cheering.
Oh, no.
He comes back after the cheering, you know, after cheering. He said, Charles, what happened? I said, what do you think happened? Rivers got up. He hit a single. He singled the center. Mm-hmm. Stole second. The next two batters, one batter walked. And I think the third batter was Nettles. He struck out, and then the cheering you heard was Reggie hit one out to the opposite field, and you could have heard over all of the people. Oh man, no! Say, y'all miss Reggie hitting one out. So we, you know, things like that, you know, and I remember taking Kim to see the movie Fame because she was artistically inclined. And Fame was based on the sister school of my high school. So I wanted to see it. So, you know, we did things like that as a family. You know what I'm saying? You know, trips to Montclair for ice cream on Sunday, and just stuff like that. And all that time, you know, Blanche and I are cementing our relationship, you know. And actually I jumped back prior to the marriage, but you know, that was the building stage. But Blanche and I, we just did a lot of things together. She began to accept my love of Latin and jazz. Well, never Latin, but jazz she did. And we would go out, see movies. We'd go out to clubs and, you know, listen to music and just had a good time. Cemented relationships with our various circle of friends, our different circle of friends. My friends loved her. Her friends enjoyed me. Spent time with each other's family, okay? And my dad to this, up until the day he passed, swore by Blanche. At first, there was a little trepidation because he's saying, you know, my nickname's Doobie. He said, Doobie, I don't know. She's 7 years older, divorced, two kids, you know, blah, blah, blah. Trust me on this one. And when he met her, he couldn't get enough of her. So one of the things I do want to point out, because I see time is rapidly flying here. There were many things that Blanche and I did to keep the relationship fresh. But I think one of the things that we both enjoyed the most was our invention of Friday night, and by this time the kids were out of the house, you know, living elsewhere. This is about 1988. And we started Friday nights, basically, where I would select some music for the evening. We'd light the candles, get a couple of libations. I actually got a couple of bottles of champagne. And by the way, sparkling wine, I wasn't made of money. So I don't want anybody, think that I was like hitting dumb on a
website. I'm saying,
yeah. So basically we did that. And every week, oh, by the way, and this is going to date us, we took the phones off the hook. There were no cell phones then. So, and basically celebrated our relationship every Friday night. It was a staple. People knew that if you didn't hit Charles and Blanche by 7 o'clock, you weren't reaching them until Saturday morning, if that. So that was one of the things we did. And of course, I did the things like surprise gifts, you know, flowers, you know. Matter of fact, we had a community pool where we lived. And one day when I got off of work, I came through the gates of the pool with a bouquet of flowers and, you know, handed it to her. And, you know, because I felt it was important to make her look good. She was my queen. She was my queen. So I felt it was my duty to put her on a pedestal and let people see that here's a woman who is loved. Here's a woman who's appreciated, you know? So I always believed in giving people, literally, in this case, their flowers while they were alive. Mm-hmm. So, you know, she accepted the flowers. I left her at the pool, and she said she was getting all types of stares from everybody. I would do surprise dates, you know, I took her on a jazz cruise to see John Lucien, a very romantic singer at the time. We were on a jazz cruise. And we docked back because we went to the first show. We docked back roughly about 9 o'clock on the west side. And I said, are you hungry? And she said, I can use a little bit. So we were just walking and talking. It was a beautiful, beautiful summer evening. And all of a sudden I stopped by this restaurant, which was extremely popular at the time, restaurant called Jezebel's. And I said, oh, come in here for a second. And this was a restaurant that Oprah had talked about, you know, on her show, which was extremely popular at the time. So when Blanche said, Charles, this is Jezebel's. I said, yeah, I know. So I, you know, went up, name is Duke, got reservations for 9:30. And she was just, these are the sort of things though, men have to do for their women. You know what I'm saying? And trust me, it wasn't a one-way street. She did stuff for me too, a lot of stuff. So, you know, this is kind of like what the book is about. It also explores our traveling together. We were very compatible travelers, you know, it was just a great experience for the entire 38 years that we were together. You know, I'm not sure that there's, you know, if I had, like I said, our friends considered it the yardstick. So there you have it.
I have to imagine that you probably have gotten some messages or read some views on the book, and there may have been one or many that have touched you. Can you share if you want to?
Yeah, I do. Let me, because I do write this, I do keep a note of this sort of stuff. So if you can bear with me for a second.
Absolutely. There's already so many gems, and that I can imagine that there are some people who are very much touched by it and learn something and take something away, as they should.
Yeah, well, I'll just read a couple. I'm not going to name names. Just finished the book. I could not put it down. Congratulations, Charles. You have truly given us a gift at a time of our in our lives when human-to-human touch and the bonds that come with time are a thing of the past, or at least until this pandemic is behind us. That said, your homage to love and your passionate recollection of life and love with your soulmate, Blanche, is deeply moving. Thank you. That meant a lot to me.
Yeah.
This one's too long to read for the podcast. I have one from a work colleague. Here's one I'd like to read. Your book, My Life with Blanche, Elements of a 30 Plus Year Black Marriage, is a blessing in many ways, filled with experiences and advice. A great book to gift. Trust was gained due to your transparency, and is just one reason that is difficult to put down. On marriage, building foundations for strong families, interaction between today's young men and women, why Black folks should vote, and the political statistics to back it up speaks volumes. Your book is specifically important because it addresses how we Black folks can and should nurture each other in our unions. Readers will gain a deep insight and knowledge of the unbreakable partnership you and Blanche nurtured. She went on to say, I imagined your book would be a great read and was excited about it due to the shortage of Black love stories. I saved it for a planned round trip flight to avoid interruptions. Blanche, your soulmate was a happy sister with you. Thank you, Brother Charles, for sharing the chock full of lived experiences and your solid advice. There's one more I wanna read. This one is short, but this really touched me. I will give you a touching note. My 93-year-old mom kept the book, so it's in Virginia. Though her and my dad lived in a different era, the words marriage, dating, and relationships never changed, good and bad. When I get back to Virginia, hopefully I can finish the book. I'm glad I purchased the book, not only written by a friend, but a 93-year-old tough as wood woman enjoyed reading. And then she goes on to say, oh Lord, I forgot my sister may take the book. So those were things. I mean, I got quite a few. And like I said, I keep them because, you know, every time you need a little motivation, a little pick me up, there it is. So it lets me know that the work is not in vain and it is resonating with those who have read it.
I will say, as I guess I can kind of give a review of sorts.
Okay.
Obviously we do this podcast and we're here promoting Black love at its in its finest.
Yes.
Among many messages I got from your book, one thing I really took from it is that it feels like you really took your position, your job as a husband seriously. Like it's marriages, it's tough, ups and downs, but being a husband, being one half of a marriage is work and it's serious. And making that other person happy and putting the time and the effort into the marriage can only make it better. And that's what I got from you. It's obvious you loved each other. It's obvious you loved her, but you more than just saying it, the way you showed it is what I really love about this. And
thank you.
I hope to be the kind of husband.
Oh, I thank you. I see this big smile on Carissa's face, so I know you're there. And there's no worry about you, Brother Harvey. But you know, it's all the marriage mantra. 80% give and 20% take. Now this doesn't mean that, you know, there are times that, you know, you give a little bit more than that 80%, you know, but you also get it back on the other end too, you know. And I know Carice could probably identify with this. There were a couple of times when we're talking about budgeting and what have you, a couple of times that there was always seems to be this shoe sale that was taking place. So she took a little bit more from the 80%. However, there were a couple of times that my boy Mark, my good friend Mark White, my best friend Mark White, had tickets to a Mets game that wasn't planned. So I took a little bit more from the budget. and had a good time. But you know, we never got to the point where we totally exploited, you know, things like the budget or anything like that. In challenging times, such as when Kim, you know, leading up to Kim's passing and Kim's untimely death, the security we felt in one another. And since that was Kim, that was Blanche's firstborn, of course, she's going to feel it a little bit more deeply. But you know, you're there for her. And like I said earlier, it's not only just in the good times, but it's also in challenging times that you have to put your wife on that pedestal. You know what I'm saying? And she has to know that that's her position, and she has to feel secure that that is where she belongs, at least in my life. And I think, you know, during those challenges, that's what made the challenging times sustainable, that we both knew where each other stood in our lives. And, you know, you take the good with the, you know, not so good, and you're able to get through the challenges, And, you know, it was just all good. It was just all good, you know? And that's all I can really elaborate on that part, you know, et cetera, et cetera. You know, I hope I'm answering your questions.
You definitely are, So, I mean, as we wind down here, your description of your marriage and the relationship, I mean, I don't think I've heard Black love described better or just exemplified better than the way you're describing it. What I'll ask is, and however you'd like to, obviously with such a great marriage,
yes,
eventually it comes to its untimely end. Can you tell us how you were able to handle eventually not having her with you, but obviously spirit, she's there forever. But how did you handle eventually losing her?
Well, excuse me. Blanche was compromised health-wise to the point of, we have to go back to 2011, May 2nd, 2011 to be exact, when both of her lungs collapsed. Now, normally, oftentimes, a collapsed lung is not a problem. But Blanche suffered from a disease called sarcoidosis. So it was a double, you know, thing on her. Her being in the hospital for 6 weeks in 2011 was when I really first went through the changes. I mean, she had some other health issues during the course of our relationship. We weathered the storm. But 2011 was the big one. So she goes to the hospital 6 weeks. She eventually rehabs back, what have you. But you kind of know at that point that, you know, we're coming in for the final landing, okay? She retires from her job in 2015. And the next 2 years, next 2 or 3 years, she's in and out of hospitals, rehab, and you just find the strength. I don't know how I did it. We have a great circle of friends, great family, who is very supportive, but you just find the strength to muscle through it. I'm still, to a degree, dealing with her passing, okay? When it comes to, you know, I feel her loss a lot on Friday nights. I feel her loss just giving me, I hear it spiritually. I feel her loss being there on a day-to-day basis, us facing life together. I started preparing myself in earnest, the latter part of 2017, when she was like going to the hospital almost like every other month, basically. And then the necessary rehab stint after that. But New Year's Eve, 2017, going into 2018, when she did not want to celebrate, she stayed in bed. That's when I knew, you know, it was, you know, this the plane is landing now. Okay. So you just prepare yourself. It's very difficult. It's very difficult. One situation that I cite in the book, because I'm working, is my company put on 3 trade shows in its industry during the course of the year. And the first one was coming up, which was Las Vegas. Now, Kim died the day before Mother's Day in 2005. So therefore, every Mother's Day, Blanche was just, she didn't, you know, she had a hard time dealing with Mother's Day at that point. I happened in the date that Kim died was May 7th. I took off for Vegas on May 8th. Now Blanche, we made arrangements. Blanche was staying with my son north of here in Jersey. And she was just having a hard, No, my oldest granddaughter was staying here while I was away. So I take off May 8th and I land in Vegas. May 10th, which is Thursday, and that's the day that a large part of my job, which is conference manager, I was also senior editor of the magazine, but as conference manager, it's my job to get the seminars and the conferences moving, introduce them, make sure that there are people to introduce them. After the first hour flies by okay, from 8 to 9, about halfway through the second hour, I get a phone call from my oldest granddaughter. Bibi, that's what my grandkids call them. I got to take mama to the hospital, to the doctor. She's not feeling well. Now I'm on the other side of the country. She's here in Jersey. Of course, I'm, you know, and I describe it in the book, chapter 18, Vegas. So I'm going nuts. You know, my boss offers, you know, just drop everything, fly home. But Blanche is like this. Charles, I would never forgive myself if I made you come home from Vegas all the way here. Plus the doctor said, oh, it's just something, I'll be out, you know, in a few days, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And, but it didn't stop the stress and all that sort of stuff. But once I called her and I talked to her doctor, and she's well ensconced into the hospital and being taken care of, that cut the worry a lot. So it was like, I got home on Mother's Day that year, which I think was May 13th, something like that. And she was asleep in the hospital. I went straight from the airport. I got her some roses because it was Mother's Day. Went straight to the airport and from the airport to the hospital. And just gently woke her up and said, you know, and she was so happy to see me, you know. The last we're leading up to, at that point in time, Blanche has less than 2 months to live, or she had 2 months to live. And, you know, we're battling this, that, and the other, and what have you. She goes into the hospital last time, July 9th. And, you know, she hangs on. And eventually she passes on July 12th, which is, I mean, of course, devastating to me. But the wake, her wake, And that's the thing we have, as you know, before the funeral. The wake was what was going to be, the wake was on our 35th anniversary. So, you know, that's hitting me. The next morning is the funeral. So I'm, you know, and I at this point in time, I'm just completely wiped out, you know, and, you know, it's, but you muscle through is what you do as a man. And she left here knowing, I was with her up to her very last breath. She left here knowing that I was there, that I, you know, she did not have to worry about a thing. I was gonna take care of matters, and that was it. But, you know, it's, of course, I go into more detail in the book about it. And, but it was a challenging time. And like I said, I'm still dealing in the aftermath of her passing. I'm a lot better now than I'll say I was in 2018. But, you know, things are, you know, we're getting back to normal. We're getting back to normal, pretty much. So,
I have greatly appreciated you sharing so much, all of these stories of your life with Blanche, just so much of your heart and your soul as you're just speaking about her. It is so touching. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I just feel mm-hmm. like in a nice little soft, mushy, like love space.
Harvey, take care of that after this.
Nope. Okay. You know what I'm...
I just want to, you know.
Take care of that. Mr. Duke.
Let me stop. I'm messing around. I like to joke around a lot.
No doubt. I want to say, well, I mean, I want to reiterate what you said. Thank you so much.
Oh, my pleasure.
And I remember the reason you came to mind when we're thinking for guests for this podcast is you mentioned a little bit how you were dealing with, you know, your wife's passing and such. Mm-hmm. And I remember you posted something beautiful. And I remember, for me, I remember saying, wow, because in all honesty, I don't know if I could handle it if I lost Reese. And what I remember... whatever you posted that time, it felt like it was really strong and very like, mm-hmm. this is what I would have to do. So I never forgot that. So, yeah. And obviously your strength.
And the posting is one of the ways I dealt with it.
Oh.
Posting thing. That's one of the ways I've dealt with her death. I tried to deal with it with humor a little bit, you know, recalling a lot, because Blanche had one heck of a sense of humor. And, you know, that's... You know, I can't say it was easy, but, you know, it's one of the ways that I was able to do that. And I'm glad that you got something from it.
I got so much from it. Just kind of living in the memories. That's what it feels like hearing you talk.
Yeah.
So, you know, if that happens, if I have to experience that, I know kind of how I would deal with it. But what I will say as we kind of close out, this podcast has always been us just promoting and trying to improve, you know, people's expectation or ideas of what Black love is.
Mm-hmm.
Very much reading your book is as close to a manual on how a marriage, and particularly a Black marriage, should be done. And I applaud you for the husband, the father, the man that you were then and are now.
Thank you. Thank you. That means a lot to me.
Oh, and just being able to talk to you meant a lot to me.
Yeah.
So thank you so much.
Not a problem.
No problem. And
where can our listeners find My Life with Blanche?
If you didn't bring it up, I was. No, okay. Right now, the book is available on Amazon.com. My Life with Blanche, Elements of a 30-plus Year Black Marriage. And I felt it was important to title it as such because, once again, we don't have that manual, okay? And that's one of the thrusts in doing it. The book, the hard copy of the book, because on Amazon is only available as an ebook. You can order the hard copy through me direct mail. And let me just give you, I'm gonna give you a website, but I'm also gonna give you a mailing address. First of all, the website is bonetowneditorial.com www.thefreedomcoach.com. There's four links up there. There's like my business, Bowtown Editorial Services. And the second link, I think, is My Life with Blanche. So you click on My Life with Blanche and you scroll down past the big representation of the cover and you'll find out little blurb on the book, what have you. It has the link to Amazon, but also it has the mailing address and the information on how to order it. You're going to order it through Zelle. You can order it through Cash App, or you can and take down this address, y'all. Bonetown Publishing, Post Office Box 246, Franklin Park, New Jersey, 08823. That is Bonetown Publishing. Oh yeah, I did radio in college. Post Office Box 246, Franklin Park, New Jersey, 08823. Please order the book. I think it's a good read. I think that everybody will get something from it. I'm it's a work that I'm truly proud of. Okay. And if it helps one relationship, one marriage, you know, I'm glad that it is. The book doesn't stop with Blanche's death, by the way. There's chapter 20. Let me just read from the table of contents. Chapter 20 is Remembering Bone. And obviously that was my nickname for Bone of Bonetown. Okay. Born from the thing of the biblical thing, bone of my bone, flesh of my flesh. Chapter 21 is called Shop Talk, and that's specifically for the brothers. Okay. How to keep the relationship alive, what we must do, how we must approach relationships. Chapter 22 is awareness. Awareness deals with our cultural walk. Okay. Mm-hmm. And mine and Blanche's cultural walk, but you know, the importance of having a cultural foundation in your relationship. Blanche and I were pretty Afrocentric. If you know, I wish I could pan the camera around. You'll see a lot of art around here, Afrocentric art. So we thought that was important. And chapter 23 is when I wind it on down with final thoughts. So get the book. The book is a good one. My Life with Blanche, Elements of a 30 Plus Year Black Marriage. I think in the title, 30 plus years sort of like shows, it was very successful. Black marriage, it will be very culturally relevant. So trust me, there is a lot here. I give, you know, some stats in the book about, you know, marriage and what have you. Not a lot, it's not a textbook. But at the same token, I try and back a lot of my stuff up, so. Mm-hmm. A lot of my personal opinion, I try and back up. So that's it. Listen, man, this has been great. I enjoyed this.
Yes, so great. We greatly appreciate it. Listeners, please buy the book.
All that information he gave will be in the episode notes.
In the show notes.
You will be able to find it. So
thank you. Thank you very much. Yeah. And that's bonetowneditorial.com.
Okay, Harvey, I think we have definitely come to the conclusion that love is eternal.
I like eternal.
It is.
I like it.
Love is many things.
But this good love is black.
Thanks for listening to the Love is Black podcast.
Please help support the podcast by subscribing and leaving a review.
And connect with us on Facebook and Instagram at Love is Black Podcast.
See you next week.